Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest here on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Tom Williams. Tom enlisted in the U.S. Army in 2013 and became an airborne intelligence analyst. He has served in locations from the Middle East to the Arctic, displaying exceptional dedication and forming his own unique philosophy on leadership, something we're going to hear about today. So, hi, Tom. Thank you so much for being with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm super excited.
Well, I have to say, so am I. I think you're my very first podcast guest that's even been to the Arctic, let alone served there in a military capacity. So I get to check off another part of the globe.
Oh. But
beyond the high-level background that I shared in my intro, what else do you like for people to know about your background and professional experience?
Yeah, sure. So 11 years, like you mentioned, in the Army. Done everything from 10th Special Forces Group, the 82nd Airborne Division, where I'm trying to go back to, and then I'm up here with the 11th Airborne Division in the Arctic. So I deployed in 2016-17. We won the Battle of Mosul. We defeated ISIS over there. Great stuff. And then here I am today, father of five.
Wow. Now, just to make sure I heard you right, are you in the Arctic now?
No, we're in Anchorage.
You are.
A lot of the work that we
still
do. Yeah.
Really north and cold. Okay, we'll give you partial credit.
Yeah, but we have been to the Arctic.
Absolutely. Now let's talk a little bit more about sort of this leadership philosophy that I know we're going to get to today. Some of those things, and you just talked about them, were opportunities that you had because you were recognized even before doing those things as a high performer. And I'm sure people that want to have opportunities, people that want to achieve and excel would like to sort of emulate that and so be given similar opportunities. Any sense of what it was specifically that the U.S. Army and any of the leaders you worked with directly recognized in you that caused you to be selected for that those opportunities?
Sure, yeah. So like the barrier to entry for the military, if you want to be the guy for anything, is always the right place, the right uniform, and really the right time, right? So those are like your three basics. Now, if you want to get to like PhD level good, you start solving organizational level problems. And so for me, probably how I got the home run in terms of like getting to do what I did in Iraq was I had this platoon leader. She was fantastic, but she was still very young, didn't have any experience doing collection management at the time, which is like essentially like trying to get the assets at the right places at the right time on a spreadsheet. And I wasn't married at the time. I had no kids. So I spent all weekend working on this problem. When I went to work on Monday, I was like, hey, here's the solution to what I think your problem is. And she's like, boom, hired. You're going to be my guy for this deployment. So it's stuff like that. So if you really want to get to the PhD level stuff, you just figure out what your boss's problems are and you solve it without them even having to ask you to do it. That's kind of like my claim to fame and what I try and do everywhere I go. Now, it's harder at some levels than it is others, but...
But that being proactive, I mean, so many times you go through life and it doesn't really matter if it's a professional capacity, military capacity, frankly, community or family. A lot of times you see people sort of doing the dance, like I'm not going to be the one that gets signed up for this task versus you saw an opportunity, you saw a need, and you were proactive about signing yourself up for that. I think while it can be a challenge to make the decision to do that kind of thing, what appeals to me about it is that it does tell each one of us we are maybe more in the driver's seat of our own situation than we may even realize. You took a situation, you recognize it, and you sort of put yourself in the right place at the right time, wearing the right uniform, as you said.
Yeah, that's really it. Is we all get to choose our own destinies. I mean, I read the book The Secret when I was in high school, and I was like, man, this is so true. It's also true. Like you get to pave your own way, and the amount of effort that you put in is what you get in return. So.
Yeah. Now, I think, leadership is one of those things that gets discussed certainly in business all the time. I'm sure it's the same for the military. And every once in a while, you'll see sort of a little meme type thing or a little picture that goes by that, okay, this is management, but this is leadership. And leadership is hard because there are so many intangibles between it and management that truly make a difference. And fortunately, there's no one right way to lead. But are there some components or some personal characteristics that you have seen really need to be present in people for them to be not just good managers, but effective leaders?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. So here's my philosophy, right? Like anybody can be a boss, right? Anybody that works at McDonald's, fast food, you can be a boss, but you can also make the decision to be a leader no matter what level you're at. Because leaders can also be peer leaders. They can be your actual boss who's also a leader. And then they've got like organizational level leaders, which is like, you know, for me, it would be like the Department of Defense is like, you know, like my big leadership. And then I've got like battalion leadership and all the like the subordinate commands underneath it. But going back to like characteristics that like really like line up based on like what makes you a leader versus a boss are pretty simple. Do you actually care about the people that work underneath you is probably the biggest identifier that I see. And this is even in my years in the Army and just in the military in general, you can tell like, hey, this guy right here, he's more of a boss, but this guy over here, that's a leader. And I would follow that guy to hell and back in the day, you know? So there's just like, you can just smell the leadership capabilities on somebody because the way that they treat you, do they know your name? Do they know you? Do they know about your family? I talk about this quite frequently is like, how invested with my mental capacity am I in my people? And do I think about them before I assign them tasks? Like, do I think like, oh, you know, so-and-so's strength is this. Maybe I should give them that task because they really like doing that kind of stuff. And then another thing is too, I've been preaching recently is like, give people paid days off. Like if you're a real leader and not a boss, you're going to give people their time to go and appreciate their life's big events. You know, I've missed big life events, but I'll tell you like the person that remembers is my wife's and I's anniversary and gives me the day off. I'm going to work 10 times harder for that guy on the flip side or gal, you know?
Well, and I think that's cool because, you know, you talk about some of the things like connecting with people on a personal or individual level, really thinking about pairing someone with a situation where not only are they going to be successful, but it's truthfully going to be good for everybody else involved. It means that there are things that ideally should be present, but that each leader or aspiring leader can also put their own stamp, can use their own style in terms of exactly how they lead. Have you had an opportunity to experience a wide range of leadership styles and over time kind of, you know, I think your anniversary example is an awesome one. Maybe that's something you literally carry forward versus maybe something else you experience and you say, wow, effective coming from that person, but I don't think I can do that and seem authentic in it. Have you had a chance to think about, okay, leadership overall, but what is my style?
Yeah, I'll start by giving you my biggest weakness. I am terrible with names. I am so unbelievably bad. Like I can remember somebody's face from 11 years ago, but I cannot remember their name for like the life of me unless we worked together, you know, essentially religiously over time for quite a bit of time. I had this old boss. His name at the time was Colonel Work. He was my brigade commander who I worked for in Iraq. Now he's the division commander of the 82nd Airborne Division. Fantastic leader, best leader I've ever worked for in my life. This guy can remember people's names like as far back as time goes.
Wow.
Like I'm not that guy, but he is. But it does make you feel special when somebody, you know, so high up the chain remembers you even when you're pretty low on the totem pole. So that's one thing that I'm terrible with. But for me, for really what I take, you know, to home every single time as a leader, is really just, I care about people's time. I really don't like wasting people's time. This is a volunteer organization in the Army. Like we all sign the contract, we all raise the right hand and, you know, we, you know, swear to defend the Constitution of the United States. Right. So for me, I'm like, time is our most precious resource as humans, in my opinion. I don't think we can buy time back as much as people talk about, like, I'm going to get rich so I can buy my time back. Like you're not buying time you've already spent back. You've already lost that time. So really the biggest thing for me, like I had mentioned, is giving people their time. And the more that I've done that, the more I've realized that like people truly care. You know, the more you use their time effectively, not only that, it's kind of like, sorry, I'm going to take this off another tangent here.
Sure.
But, you know, if you give people stuff to do at work that they feel like they're being, you know, value added to the team, they're going to want to work harder for the team. And then on the flip side, by not like giving them their time off, then they know like, hey, when I go to work, I'm going to put in work. And when it's time to have off, I'm going to have that time off. And like, if you can find the balance as a leader, it's really important. And it's really hard to get like, right. You know, like I've had to admit, like work on that, that left and right balance pretty hard, but.
And that is tough. And knowing that everybody is making their decisions or valuing things based on a slightly different set. I mean, I think most people would rather have more discretionary time than less. Most people would rather have more money than less. But exactly how they would draw the line between those two things is going to be a little bit different by person. And I think it's interesting that you bring up this topic of time. So let's look at that in another way. You know, we certainly are in an entrepreneurial economy today. And in many cases, people are rising to positions of, I will say leadership, but in some cases, we're talking about managers and bosses before they've had the time to experience good and bad leadership examples. Now, do you have any specific advice for people who find themselves in positions of potential leadership when they're young or early in their career versus people that have been around for a few more decades and have maybe experienced some more things?
Yeah. So I've also been guilty of this myself, like being the young guy. I remember when I pinned sergeant 2 years into the Army, which is pretty quick. And one of the things is like when you don't have enough leadership experience underneath your belt, you tend to just make very black and white calls like this is yes and this is no, and you're going to do it regardless of what I say. Where the truth is, people don't like to be told what to do. Now I ask for favors because, like, as an officer, they have to do whatever I say. But if I'm like, hey, Sergeant so-and-so, do you mind doing me a favor? They're like, oh, yeah, sir. And then it seems like they're just, I'm still telling them to do it, but it's in a much more passive way, which gives them the opportunity to, like, fulfill the task, what they feel is like their own leisure. And then it normally gets done faster because they're doing it because they want to do it. So there's, like, some psychology to it that, like, you kind of, like, develop over time. I didn't come up with that technique myself. It's definitely a borrowed technique that I learned with time and experience, but especially for the young folks, the best thing I ever did was make my whole team one time take the Myers-Briggs personality test. And then once you learn everybody's personality types and then you know yours, you can start to like leverage their personalities. And it makes such a difference. Like my wife and I took it and it like completely changed the way that we see our relationship. She's like the moderator who's like, you know, trying to see the world through like this beautiful lens. And then there's me who's like the commander personality. And I'm like very to the point, very task oriented.
Yeah.
But since I know her personality is like, you know, grand world view, the world is beautiful. Like I can kind of like talk in those terms, and doing that with your teams is like that's a really good free chicken, you know?
Absolutely. Well, and looking at things, not just through circumstances, but personality, right? And I would think if you're a leader who's looking for your style, who's figuring out what your style is going to be, if you have the opportunity, maybe watching your leadership style hit the faces of people. I mean, we've all made this mistake. You gave yourself as an example. I'll throw myself on this. You say something that you think is relatively straightforward, and you see either faces freeze, or you see people go white, or you see them break eye contact. And when you recognize that behavior, you think, oh no, what have just said? What have I just done?
And it hurts. It hurts you more than them.
Not do that again. Like, don't, you know, having that feedback loop to be able to think, okay, I managed to get the group where I needed them to go, but how do we all feel about each other at the end of the day? Like, oh, if it's not a great feeling, you know, you've got to find another way, right?
Oh yeah. And it's the worst feeling. Like if I do that to somebody, I'll drive home my 15 to 20 minute drive and I'm just dreading it and thinking about how I can do it better the next time, you know? And I'll often like circle back and apologize and be like, hey, I didn't mean to come off this way.
Yeah.
And that's how you kind of buy back some of that credibility that you lost out of the credibility bank. But yeah, it does hurt.
Absolutely. Now, one of the other things that surprised me, because you and I chatted previous to recording so that we could figure out where we wanted to spend our time, I had asked you about mind over matter. And it's funny because we've talked about, you've been to the Arctic, you're in Alaska now, I'm in Boston, and yet I don't really do cold. Like I can handle cold. And yet I say that fully recognizing that in the grand scheme of things, Boston is not actually that cold. And so my concern was, okay, you've been to the Arctic. I can't imagine functioning mentally in a place that is so physically challenging. And you said that's actually not so hard, right?
Yeah. So I think I gave you my elevator pitch, which is kind of like if I can get, you know, 20 to 40 people to follow me out of an airplane at negative 20 degrees, full knowing it's going to be negative 50 degrees that night with high winds, and they'll do it, then I can pretty much coach anybody on how to leave. It is more mind over matter, because the reality is like, it's part about trusting your equipment, right? I don't think maybe I've got the jacket here, but we've got like level 7 jackets that are, you know, it's like wearing, you know, a comforter sleeping bag.
Okay.
You know, for example. So we've got all of the equipment to where, you know, you're going to survive, you know, you're not going to die. And once you have that confidence built up, it's fairly easy just to like execute. It's like jumping out of an airplane. I just had, you know, like my 50-second jump. It's like, you just do the exact same motions over and over and over again. It's not, nothing really changes. And that's why I think we went down the conversation of training, right? And so Yes. You're actually like training the same things over and over and over every single year through a training cycle. So that when you do it for real and you build up, you start out incrementally and then big exercise, incrementally, big exercise. So like you're training all of the tasks over and over and over again. So it's just muscle memory and you're just doing the same things. And that's how we get the mind power in the military. It's the training, more so than it is like the matter, because it's going to be cold, and the cold does. It can be harsh.
Now, can you train on leadership? Is that absolutely something where you can train?
Absolutely. And the only way that you do that is by doing it. Like, so one thing that I used to do in my platoon all the time is I would take the private who's like the youngest guy fresh out of basic training, and I'd be like, okay, Sergeant so-and-so, you're going to coach him along. This is your guy, but he's going to run your team for this little exercise. See how he does, and we'll give him some coaching pointers at the end. Boom, execute. He goes and does it. Comes out like about a 50% solution. And the next time he does it the next week, he's a 60 or 70% solution. You keep doing that over and over again. Because like fire commands for a rifle team are really not that difficult. You're literally just employing people in the right spots and making sure it's safe when you shoot. Not that complicated. It sounds complicated if you don't do it for a living. It's not that complicated in reality. But them like having that picture, now when they go back to be the rifleman and they know like, hey, I'm going to be this guy in like 2 years when I'm the sergeant, like now they understand why he's making those decisions, and it makes them trust their leader even more because they've been the guy having to make those calls. So it's like a triple win, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I'm also a big fan of sort of like free lessons. So I'll say this from my perspective, I spend a lot of time interviewing people. So when I'm not interviewing someone, but I'm watching an interview happen, if I can, I will actually try to switch off my brain around the content. I forget what they're talking about. Watch the body language, watch the technique. You try to sort of watch other people. I personally don't like it when people are yelling over each other. So like, okay, not going to do that. Not going to get in fights with people during podcast interviews. Doesn't make for good listening. But I think in some cases we can sit back and do our primary job and watch other people doing the job we aspire to and make little mental notes. Do you find that that's an effective part of leadership training as well?
Oh, absolutely. Remember Colonel Work that I was talking about a couple minutes ago? I remember I used to look at that guy and I was like, man, I want to be him. And I was enlisted at the time. So he offered me the opportunity to like write him if I ever need anything. And I was like, hey, would you, you know, support me in becoming an officer? He's like, absolutely. Next day I got a letter of recommendation, and that's how I'm an officer today. So it was because I wanted to be like him, and I was trying to emulate the things that I thought were cool. Still can't pull off the name thing. That is unbelievably hard to do. I'm bad with names. I admit it. Also reading books, right? So like, I remember coming into the Army, I think it was Colin Powell's book titled It Worked For Me. You know, if you read books by people that you want to be like, it's super easy to pick up some of the things that they like and they don't like. Some of my most famous one-liners from being around the battalion or from that book that I read when I was 17 years old, thinking about joining the Army. So, yeah.
And I don't know if it was from the book you read, because it wouldn't surprise me to find out that Colin Powell had written more than one, but I know for me, one of his quotes is one of the things I say to myself all the time. And it's something along the lines of, everything always looks better by the light of the morning. Like as bad as it seems right now, as awful as it seems right now, just go to bed. And when you get up tomorrow, you may be dealing with a completely different situation, even because your own frame of reference around it has changed.
Yeah, I actually just had this conversation with one of my leaders at breakfast the other day, literally along the same topic. I think it might even be the same chapter in the book, but it was titled, what was the title? It was something along the lines of like, beware of first reports. Because the first time you get a report, it's really bad. Like normally the first information you receive is like, the world is on fire.
Yeah.
And then it's like, come to find out after a couple hours and some more information, it's more like, no, something bad did happen, but it's not as bad as we thought. We had the right leaders go and assess it, and it's not as bad as it is. And how you respond as a leader is really important in this, that mind frame that you're talking about right now is like a really good coping mechanism that I use quite frequently. It's like, don't, like, beware of first reports, because it might sound bad. And me as the leader, I don't want to be the one that's shocked and then turn around and like rage on my people, because that doesn't do anything. That just adds confusion. Yeah. You need solutions, not problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are already quite enough problems. I think we can all probably agree to that. There are already plenty of things outside of our control that are issues. There's certainly no need to be adding more problems to that pile.
Yeah, absolutely. And you as the leader, like, really have to be the person that's confident and calm, even when the worst things are happening. And that's not something you just develop overnight, because the first time a bullet goes whizzing by your head, you're kind of like, whoa, that was close, you know? So yeah, definitely. And it's especially true in the civilian sector too, especially with some of my friends that are, you know, in big business, so to speak, or my brother. I mean, maybe you get a bad day on the stock market. There's no reason to like 100% freak out, because the stock market's still trending upwards.
Absolutely. No, that's absolutely true. And in our personal lives, we deal with the same things, right? I love your piece of advice about being skeptical of first reports, because so many times that is exactly what happens. And so even the idea of leadership, it really doesn't matter what capacity you work in. If you're having contact with people, there's always an opportunity to be a good leader or a bad leader. Fortunately for most of us, there's always another tomorrow. And so we get to try again, even if we have an off day. Now, Tom, before I let you go, we have sort of a tradition here on The Sourcing Hero. And I will say, I always sort of hesitate when I'm speaking to a veteran, somebody in the military, with this question, because I think it goes so much deeper. But we really do ask this of everybody that joins us on the show. So I'm going to give you two questions. You can answer whichever one you like, and there are no wrong answers. But the choices are either what does the idea of a sourcing hero mean to you? Or if you want to think a little bit more broadly, what do you think heroism looks like in a business context?
Okay. Yeah, those are both really good questions. So for the sourcing hero aspect, would you like my logistician mindset?
Oh, we'll
on this?
Take it. Absolutely.
Okay. Because I was going to go with the hero one, but I think this could be a good pointer, just because I've recently moved into a logistics role, and I think the whole sourcing hero thing kind of fit. So from a logistics standpoint, what I've learned in my first 2 months as a logistics officer on staff here is really, if you're able to forward plan as much as humanly possible, it makes everything immensely easier. And if somebody just would have told me like, hey, look at what's on the calendar and start planning for it and putting in the request today, 30 to 60 days out, my life would be immensely easier, instead of picking up some of the messes I've had to do for others.
Absolutely. And since you sort of brought it up, I have to ask, because I will regret it for the rest of my day if I don't. Given your military service, given your emphasis on leadership, what would you say more broadly about heroism?
You know, I had this piece of advice many years ago by a lieutenant colonel in one of my classes that I was in, and it was probably the best advice that I ever got. And it is, make yourself vulnerable as a leader. And this applies to both business and in the military. If you're able to sit there and actually like be human with somebody, they're going to work immensely harder for you. And that does take heroism. Like me opening up about, you know, everything that I've done wrong in the military and giving that for free to people so they don't make the same mistakes. That is true heroism in terms of like simple stuff that they can do, especially just around the office on the day to day. So hopefully that meets the mark on your question.
Absolutely. Now, if people are meeting you through this conversation, maybe they're watching the interview, maybe they're listening to us talking, if they would like to get in touch with you, if they would like to learn more about what you're up to, where would you direct them to go?
Yeah, honestly, if you want to get in touch, I'm just kind of getting my business ventures off to the start, but tom@warforgedleadership.com is the best email to reach me. I've also got a book out. It's on Amazon, Warforged Leadership. And it talks about actually a lot of the stuff we talked about today. So those are the two best avenues.
Awesome. Well, Tom, thank you so much for being here, for sharing so much of yourself. And I have to say, stay warm.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well and always remember that you can be a hero too.